welcome to another edition of the I&I podcast. My name is Dan Aspel. I'm part of the administrative staff here at the Institute. Today, I'm sitting down with Suzanne Hilger, who has been a long-term participant on one of 2018's final programmes. So, Suzanne, hello.
Hello.
So tell us a little bit about the programme that you've been part of.
Okay, I've been part of the programme Scaling Limit, Rough Path and Quantum Field Theory. It started at the beginning of September and it will go until the 21st of December. Now only quite a few people are left, but it was quite intense program for me. So I'm a PhD student in my last year, so it was at the beginning quite frightened to be in this area with all these really good researchers.
So quite senior people you're surrounded by. Yeah.
Yeah. I learned a lot. I really worked a lot. My PhD thesis really extended a lot. And on my background knowledge is really, it immensely increased. So it was really good.
Fantastic. And so it's a rare opportunity. I spoke previously to another PhD student who'd taken part in a similar program, and it must be quite a rare opportunity to spend a 4-month period of your PhD research with leading figures in that field.
Exactly,
I think that must be fair to say. And no wonder it seemed intimidating. It sounds, I mean, I'm not a mathematician, but it sounds intimidating to me to be surrounded by people who are at the edge of the research. So I presume that attitude changed after the first few weeks or first month, perhaps.
All the mathematicians are mostly very nice, so it was no problem. But,
excellent.
So
you're based at Bonn in Germany, and tell me about the specifics of, that's probably too big a question. Tell me about a broad picture about your PhD. What is it that you've been working towards?
The subject.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm in mathematical physics, which is, I was educated more in analysis, and then during my master thesis, I came into this field of mathematical physics where I use tools from analysis and probability to understand models in mathematical physics. And what I do exactly is, of course, very hard to explain. These problems in mathematical physics, they are motivated by physics problems, and they can be told better than the math, which is hidden. So this I can try to explain.
Please. I mean, if you think you can explain it in a way that I can understand, I'd be thrilled to hear it.
Part of, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So the motivation for my work stems from material sciences. Imagine you have some material and you want to understand how the material reacts to force. So I don't know, if you have a car and you want to understand when the car is crashing somewhere, then the force should be not led to the persons inside the car, but kind of led above or below, redirected. And to understand how material reacts to force, one has to really understand very well the material itself. So one could go to the atomic scale and impose some energy there, and then try to get an impression how this energy you impose on this really microscopic scale, how this then corresponds to an energy on the macroscopic scale. So how this is related. And this procedure, going from microscopic scale to macroscopic scale, is, if you want to do it mathematically rigorous, then it's very hard. And this kind of procedure, it's called randomization group, or one method to do this procedure is randomization group method, and this is the mathematical method I use.
That's fascinating. Yeah. So you used an example there which was very straightforward for a non-mathematician to understand, of the force hitting an object, and then you're trying to protect someone inside a car, for example. But it seems, in ways that perhaps I can't think of immediately, that has a lot of applications related to industry or beyond.
Yeah, exactly. But in fact, I mean, the research I do is quite far from the real applications. Right?
Okay.
We have to simplify the models and simplify more in order to prove really stuff rigorously. So, physicists also tackle these kind of problems, but they don't want to prove it really rigorously. So they do like simulations, and so they understand quite many models, I think, and they really have this kind of direct application. But we unfortunately we really want a rigorous proof, and so we have to simplify models such that they are quite far from reality, unfortunately. Okay.
Yeah, because you were saying there about like you're looking down to the atomic level. So for you, would you say that for you, like a truly rigorous proof would be something which could map that movement from the atomic level up to the macro scale, which is astonishing, really. I mean, is that, how feasible is that? Is that something which you ever, that people have achieved in other fields within mathematics, or is that something which, you know, to create a rule or a formula which can apply to something from the atomic level up to the macro level?
Yeah, there are techniques and methods, but yeah. Depending on the model at atomic scale, it's quite hard to get this than this
scaling up to
scaling.
Yeah. Wow.
But there are methods, and one quite elaborate method is this randomization group technique.
Fantastic. Yeah. And so obviously the 4 month period that you've been here, how much has your research and that of the program moved along in that period, do you think?
Okay, so. I had studied like 3 years, so I was at a 3 year period of my PhD when I arrived here, and I had my results. So I have one big result in my PhD, and I had kind of it improved a lot here due to discussions with other people and due to hard work, and I really got a nice draft of my PhD already, so it's really at a real good shape now.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So there's not much left to finish it.
Well, that's like a wonderful feeling, I'm sure.
Really,
yeah.
Really tiny things, yeah.
So when does it come to an end, your PhD? When do you hand it in?
I hope to hand it in like in February or so.
Okay.
Or like,
so you've got a month off now. You've got January with nothing to do because it's already finished.
There are small things, but in fact, it's not good, yeah.
Oh, well, congratulations. That's great news. There's another element here, which is that we've had a discussion before off microphone about especially mathematical physics being quite male-dominated. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair to say. I mean, mathematics in general has a gender imbalance, which all of us are working towards redressing. But I think mathematical physics is perhaps one of the worst for having a larger number of men than women. How do you feel working in this field as a woman, as a woman mathematician? You are definitely a minority. Does that affect your work or your experience of your research?
Yeah, very much indeed. I have no role models or almost no role models, and this is really a big problem for me. So all the time I really feel I'm just too bad doing these things. I don't think that I can really proceed in academia so there's a big, I'm really afraid of being too bad all the time. And of course this affects my work a lot. So,
yes, that sounds very challenging. And
so at the moment, I'm at the stage where I should apply for postdoc positions since it's to start in autumn 2019. And I mean, I do it, but I'm not convinced that I'm the person who can do a job in academia, since I think I'm too bad. And this is, I think it's just because I have no role models.
Yeah.
And I have no examples to see, women can do math.
And do you find any support or lack of support from amongst your peers, amongst, let's say, the rest of the program, or perhaps back in Bonn, you know, the rest of your faculty? Do you find, you say you have no role models, do you find that there's not necessarily a good amount of support from the people around you, encouraging you to remind you that, in fact, you're taking part in a program here and you're finishing your PhD and you are, you know, an extremely capable mathematician?
I mean, there I experience a lot of support, I have to kind of ask for it, you know. So,
sure.
So there are almost only men around me, and they don't realize the problem, of course. So I have to tell them, and then I get a lot of support. So my advisor is really supporting me a lot, and so this is not the problem. But I still have to convince myself kind of that I'm capable of things.
So you say you have no role models. Sorry. So it seems that there aren't any women in the positions that your ambitions would lead you to. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, there are a few women, but most of them then, for example, have no family or no children. So this
sure.
is, yeah, it's difficult for me.
Yeah. It sounds like there's a kind of unspoken atmosphere of, well, you either continue with your academic studies or you have a family and you can't do both.
Yeah, or there are really just very, very few women who, follow the academia path and have a family and children. And, yeah.
Yeah, which seems like an absurd choice to be forced to make. It should be, both should be readily available.
Yeah.
It's very interesting to talk to you about this. And as you've already reached, I mean, you say that the confidence to apply for your postdoc positions, you know, it can be knocked quite easily. But from my point of view, speaking to you about the work you're doing, it seems illogical that you wouldn't, because you're already at this very high level. Would you say that being a female mathematician has had challenges just to get to the stage that you're at now, compared to, like, let's say, your male counterparts? Would you say that they perhaps have had a more straightforward journey to get to the stage that you're at now?
Apparently not, but there's always this self-confident issue, right?
Yeah.
So, this followed me through my whole education. Like, I always thought, no, how do I dare doing mathematics? I cannot do it. And it was just, yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting how these are very strong cultural forces, aren't they? And it's somehow it can be quite difficult to explain that to people that don't immediately see them. They, you know, they perhaps don't believe that they exist. But we speak to a lot of women who come to the Isaac Newton Institute who tell very, very similar stories about this sort of ingrained culture, I suppose you would call it. And what do you think we can do to help address this in the future? I mean, if you're saying that you've got no role models, it would take, you know, tremendous strength of character, wouldn't it, to be the pioneer and then become that role model for other women. Is that the way that we can get out of this? Is the way out that people like yourself can become the role models for the next generation, or should we be focusing our attentions elsewhere, do you think?
So I'm not sure if I understood correctly. So you mean
if you were to become the senior academic that you would like to be, and then you yourself would be acting as a role model for future for younger women, is that the best way to address this situation, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and it's also very good to hear, like, women speaking up, telling their stories. It's very important for me, and telling their private life, kind of. And so increasing the role models is very important.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you'll be finished here this week, and I'm guessing you'll then be heading back to Bonn.
Yeah.
And what does Christmas and New Year hold for you, other than your PhD, if I can ask? What are you looking forward to when you head back to Germany?
So I have like 7 or 8 days only at home with my husband, and I'm really looking forward to it. And we want to just spend like very quiet days and walking around, just relaxing.
Have you seen much of each other during your time here in Cambridge? Has he been visiting, or have you been heading home?
We try to see us like every 2 or 3 weeks, so quite a lot. Yeah.
But still, it's difficult to be away from your loved ones, isn't
it?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, good. Well, that sounds like a wonderful Christmas. And and then January, I presume there will be a lot of focus on your PhD. But
I'm looking forward to it.
Although you feel confident, there's always more work to do. You can always read it again. So,
yeah, exactly.
Great. Oh, well, thank you very much for taking the time to speak to me, Suzanne. And I wish you all the best for the future. I look forward to seeing how your career progresses. I hope it continues in the upward trend that it's on now. And I hope you know that you have our support, and I'm sure a lot of other support from your peers and colleagues.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.